Well, with the effect of the COVID-19 pandemic impacting on the profitability of so many businesses and the unemployment line growing by the day, there's concern that people with disabilities will struggle to find work. In March, prior to the level 3 and 4 lockdowns, the unemployment rate was 4%. But since then, several economists have been predicting a jump up to 10% or even more. Jonathan Mosen is a chief executive of Workbridge, one of the few chief executives who has a disability himself, a few chief executives of medium to large size organisations in the country. Workbridge is an employment service specifically for people with disabilities and health conditions. Jonathan has been a guest many times before on 9 to Noon, and we've discussed the challenges that people with disabilities can have in getting work. He says the job market is now even tighter. Jonathan, good morning.
Morena, Catherine.
I know you've got some things you want to say, including to employers, about how to think laterally. But I guess at the outset, this is a time where you have some concerns about what this is going to mean for people trying to get work, and specifically people with disabilities.
It is a very tough time because businesses, understandably, are all about mitigating risk. And one of the things that we do at Workbridge is try to educate employers about the fact that employing a disabled person or someone with a health condition isn't actually the risk that they think it is. And the other issue, of course, too, is that nothing great was ever achieved in business without a little bit of risk anyway. And so we talk employers through that issue. But the fact is that when there's a surplus of labor, and there's going to be a significant surplus of labor for the foreseeable future, it does make it harder for us to make that case and encourage people to think about the benefits that come from employing a disabled person.
Let's look at what times are like, even in the sort of comparatively low unemployment times we've had of late, around 4%, as we said. For some time, the unemployment rate has been the employment rate, or the unemployment rate for people with disabilities, is much higher. The employment rate lower, the unemployment rate higher.
Yes, and there are a number of factors that contribute to that. On one side of the equation, there's opportunity for disabled people, and we're very keen to encourage disabled people into tertiary partnerships. Workbridge is actually a disability-driven organisation. Our council is governed in the main by disabled people, and all of our three leaders are disabled people ourselves, the council president, the board chair, and myself. So we feel we have a kind of a moral authority, really, to go out there and make this case that actually it's not the problem that people often think it is. And there's a huge economic argument here. So if we assume that there was a median income of $40,000, which it was last time we got data on this, if disabled people had the same unemployment rate as non-disabled people, you'd actually generate $500 million extra in tax revenue. And when you consider the minimal investment that would be required to make that happen, it's a kind of a no-brainer, really.
We'll talk more about the misunderstandings people have and the role that technology has played in facilitating employment or optimising employment for people with disabilities. But one thing does occur to me that's come out of this whole situation is the very different way that organisations are working. Many more people at home, for example, looking at perhaps working different shifts. Now, if people do open their minds a bit, is there a workforce absolutely ready and willing to work in a different way?
Yes, and there's why I believe there's cause for optimism. I'm not all doom and gloom. I think that one thing about the COVID-19 epidemic is that a lot of employers who were reluctant to embrace the ideas of working from home, well, they've had to. And now they realize actually there are some benefits in working from home. You can save significant costs in office space if you encourage a work from home environment. And for many disabled people or people with a health condition, that is absolutely fantastic news, because there could be issues with the commute. It might be just simply public transport related. It's hard to find public transport that gets you to a particular office. It could be that being able to work at your own pace, in your own time, with a bit of flexibility will help. In my case, for example, I'm totally blind, but I also have a hearing impairment. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed about the COVID-19 epidemic is that a lot of these meet and greet events that as a chief executive I'm asked to attend have gone online. And so in the past, I've sometimes had difficulty functioning in a very noisy environment where everybody's talking at once, but suddenly we're on Zoom and one person is talking at once, I have as much amplification as I need, and suddenly I'm able to participate fully. So there are enormous benefits of the work from home environment for disabled people.
Let's talk about some of the misunderstandings and the impact that technology in particular has had in overcoming barriers to people being able to work and certainly work optimally. I mean, there's been just an absolute spate of developments, Jonathan. What are some of them?
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that employing a disabled person is actually going to be a really expensive proposition, and they don't know how would this person engage with our technology in our workplace. But I guess the most popular common example is Stephen Hawking. And one of the things I often wonder about Stephen Hawking, who had very little movement at all to the point that he could only blink by the end of his life, and yet was making such a huge contribution to the field of physics and understanding our universe. If his disability, his impairment, had been around before his value was appreciated, would he have had the opportunity to do what he has done? So there are all sorts of people in many fields who just want the chance to be given a go. And actually, there's all sorts of technology from switch control, such as the thing that he used, and also synthetic speech, which is how we were able to hear his thoughts, all the way to technology for blind people like me, transcription technology that will allow someone with a hearing impairment now to actually get captions in real time of a meeting, be it virtual or real, as it takes place. There are just so many options now. So I think the most dangerous thing that an employer can do is potentially miss out on the next rock star employee because they simply assume that it can't be done or that somehow it would be inconvenient or inexpensive. There is actually pretty generous government funding available to fund accommodations that might cost a bit. And many of the accommodations aren't actually technological at all, Catherine. So one of the most common things I come up against is the driver's license. You read lots of job ads and they say you must have a driver's license to apply for this job. Now, obviously, if I'm a blind guy coming in and looking at a truck driving application, you don't want to hear from me. I totally get that. But if you are someone who isn't able to drive because of their impairment and the requirement of the job is simply to get from A to B in a timely manner, so maybe it's sales, and you need to get to an appointment at a particular time, a driver's license is the means. It's not the end. And for employers to insist on a driver's license actually locks out a whole lot of very capable, competent applicants who've devised other means of getting from A to B that don't involve driving themselves.
Some of the technology, though, and I know you're a total tech geek, I mean, stuff like speech recognition technology, Dragon is used by many professionals. Again, some of the things that may assist people with particular disabilities are actually becoming mainstreamed anyway.
Yeah, this is one of the things I'm very proud of as somebody who formerly designed assistive technology. Things like the scanner that many businesses have on their desks now, that actually started life in the 70s as a very big, bulky reading appliance for blind people. It was sort of the size of a washing machine. In the early days, the 33 RPM record was designed for talking books. There are countless examples of technologies that originally were used for disabled people, designed for their use. And then somebody thought, hey, they've got a bit of an edge here, and I'd like to see that go mainstream. So that's absolutely right. We've made an amazing contribution to mainstream tech over the years.
Your iPhone, for example, has also adapted to you. And when this sort of ubiquitous tool first came out, or its Android equivalent, were you wary of whether you'd be able to use it? What have the big firms done to make it optimised for you?
Yeah, and again, it's about assumptions, isn't it? So if most people were to grab an iPhone what they would find is this big hunk of glass. There are no buttons on it, really. And as a blind person, when I first grabbed an iPhone in 2007, when they came out, I thought, this is the end for us, because if smartphones go this way, I'm not going to be able to access it. And Apple came up with a model where you essentially touch somewhere on the screen and you hear what it is that you've touched, and then you can confirm that, yes, that's the icon you actually want to activate. And suddenly, these touch screens that were once considered just a horrible development for blind people have changed the world. And blind people are out there with GPS apps and all kinds of tools, money identifiers, tools that describe what people look like, which is actually quite interesting, information I've never had access to before, and a whole range of things like that.
I hope that algorithm's learning fast.
I need to put a picture of you through the Seeing AI app, Catherine. See what it says. It says things like, you know, it sometimes guesses someone's age, and then it describes their persona, like looking neutral or looking happy. So
resting bee face.
The thing is,
algorithm needs a lot of help with what not to say.
But it changes all the time. And so something that might have been considered just impossible to do even a year or two ago has evolved now. And so I would encourage employers to just think about this. There's all sorts of data that suggests that disabled people tend to stay in a job for longer. They tend to take less sick leave. And of course, they bring diversity and a new perspective to the workplace. So there are so many benefits. And it's really just about challenging your assumptions. Don't assume that it can't be done unless you've got really strong expert advice that it can't be.
Look, the inverse of what you're saying, you've already actually alluded to, which is often these are people who have had to adapt their entire lives and are very good at it. And like this perception of helplessness can be entirely misplaced. Actually, their resilience and their innovation and their capability and their motivation may be streets ahead of other candidates you have.
Yes, and COVID-19 has shown us just how resilient human beings are. I mean, I remember the sense of foreboding, and we were just in a bit of a tailspin when we all got locked down. But within about 3 or 4 weeks, many of us actually adapted, and that just goes to show how resilient people are. And when it's your normal, you know, when you live with a particular impairment, it is just normal for you. So vision, for example, in my case, vision is a really dominant sense. People process a lot of information visually. And so when you don't have it, you know, you find other ways. But a lot of people who are dependent on their vision for so much information make all sorts of erroneous conclusions. And those conclusions aren't made out of malice, usually, or a will to discriminate. It's just genuinely that people don't know what they don't know.
That said, it amounts to discrimination. And I know it's been a polite conversation that we've had, but I know that you've got a discussion document that you're going to, a manifesto you're going to make to political parties and to heads of departments. Is this something actually that they have a responsibility to proactively address? Would it not be tolerated with other sectors of society, the sorts of discrimination that people come up against in the workplace?
Yeah, I think it's mostly inadvertent ignorance, and I do see an opportunity here. I try to be optimistic, and I don't think we've had this much of an opportunity to reform a lot of policy narratives really since the Rogernomics era. And so WorkBridge will be playing a part in that and putting out a document that suggests some things that should change in order to make sure that we maximize the potential of this group of New Zealanders. I think the other problem we have in New Zealand is that there aren't that many providers that are genuinely led by disabled people. And I do think it's important for the boards of these organizations to actually start walking some talk. There need to be more disabled chief executives like me, not just in the disability sector, but everywhere, because if providers in this country don't actually walk their own talk, how on earth can we expect the rest of New Zealand to follow our lead?
Another point that aligns with what we were talking about with Rod Carr earlier of the Climate Commission is that there is going to be a massive investment, and he focused on digitisation, digital tools, digital education as a fundamental part of the spend-up that's about to happen to ensure we are getting long-term value out of it, not just a short-term stimulus. And again, that surely opens up opportunities for where there are tools that can assist, ensuring they're part of organisations' investments, that they're built into what they're doing.
Yes, it does. And I also think it's important that those tools are in the hands of disabled people when they're actually seeking work. So there's all sorts of funding available for people if they're fortunate enough to land a job. But it kind of puts you in this trap because you really need to understand how to use the tools so that you can be job ready. And there's some real digital poverty going on in parts of the disability community at the moment. And that was incredibly evident during the lockdown period, where people who were online did know how to use their technology. They could do online shopping. They could connect with other people. Those who didn't have access or were confused by how to use the technology were incredibly isolated and actually vulnerable. So it's a serious issue that New Zealanders need to confront, I think, in terms of how we provide access to disabled people to cure that digital divide. Access to this technology actually ameliorates quite a few consequences of an impairment, whether you have a job or not.
Jonathan, thanks. Jonathan Mosen, Chief Executive of WorkBridge.